Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Rob, you're on the
Yeah,
I think you should hire Larry to be your football reporter for WEEI.com. Yeah. With that kind of – Tom, don't worry about it. You can work it out yourself. Tell us about it when the season's over.
Don't you worry about a thing.
Right, that's the kind of reporter that we need at WEEI.
Rob, the best
path to page views for the Patriots is not very complicated. It's just, Tom, you're the best. You're the absolute best, Tom. Tom Brady can do no wrong, and everybody says, yeah, awesome. So, yeah, so, hey, whatever works, absolutely. Hey,
we haven't heard you in the air that much lately. Are you being white-balled?
Reverse racism.
I hope so. That'd be great.
I heard you're dressed in satirical splendor at that men's clothing store.
Yep. Well,
I have to get out there if I can find out where it is.
Oh, it's easy drive.
Conveniently
easy.
Located.
Right down Route 2.
Yeah,
it is. Absolutely. But, you know, the story behind when we do the 30 for 30 on that commercial, I was just told this week, which Jim Hackett, we all know Jim Hackett, who's the sales guy on that, also our great fantasy writer, he purposely put in those words to tongue-tie me. Because he knew that would be a problem in that commercial. Like, how mean is that? I'm doing them a favor. How mean is that to try to get me to stumble? But no, I just powered through and screamed from the mountaintops about the great Ghoul's distinctive clothing.
Ah, you didn't quite get it. Yeah, you stumbled over that.
No, almost. Yeah.
Ghoul's distinctive clothing.
All right, so tell
you
us about
it. You heard it here on 617-779-0850.
All right, so tell us, Rob, about the new Vice President of Baseball Operations.
Okay, let Rob pronounce his name.
Chaim Bloom.
I said let Rob pronounce it.
Chaim Bloom. I mean, it's not that hard. Now, if you asked me a year ago, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But, you know, it's funny. I was telling people, when in the GM meetings, you usually get access to all these GMs in one room. So a couple years ago, I walk in there, and you know everybody. You know Billy Beane and everybody. And so you walk in, and I see this guy, and, like, this is the first time where I'm starting to realize I don't know everybody in this room. I have no idea who this guy is. And really, he, you know, for a lot of people in baseball, he was a little bit behind the scenes because he was working hand in hand as sort of a co-GM with Eric Neander down in Tampa. But guys, if you sort of dig in on Bloom a little bit, and at which we have been doing the last couple of days, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, this guy checks off all the boxes for what they were looking for, what they wanted. Does that mean it's going to work? No, but in terms of how they perceive the position going forward, this guy it fits the mold of what they were looking for.
Well, tell us about him. Tell us for people who aren't that familiar.
First, most importantly, he has a degree in the classics at Yale.
Gotta love it.
I know. Really, I mean, right in your wheelhouse. Yeah. I mean, he is though. That is, I think it was with Latin. So that was number one. So clearly he's not an educated guy at all. then he went to the Padres as an intern. He actually wrote a little bit for Baseball Prospectus. And then I think in 2006 he went to Tampa, and he's done a ton of different things, including, you know, managed the minor leagues, which is going to be an enormous deal. And then when Andrew Friedman left for the Dodgers, he sort of was promoted to the top of the front office there, along with Eric Neander, and they're the guys who have been pulling off the trades. And if you know, guys, like, one of the things that I come away from, and there's a lot to pick through in terms of his personality, how he approaches things, how they're structuring everything over there. But for me, one of the biggest things is that he has shown an ability, or Tampa has shown an ability, to not care about what people think in terms of making moves. And it's a lot easier when you're in Tampa and you have the safety net of nobody watching the games. But still, if you move on from Evan Longoria, that's a big hit. So what's that tell you about him going forward? It tells me that he's going to have a plan. He's going to say, this is right and this is wrong. And he's not going to get caught up in sprints and say, oh, well, Brock Holt's great in the community or he's great in the clubhouse. It's going to be very, very cut and dry. We think we can get a better player here, perhaps at a cheaper rate than the player we have already. And that obviously translates to the Mookie Betts conversation.
Absolutely.
And Martinez, how do you interpret that?
Well, first of all, I think Martinez is going to opt out. I think that's more of the player's decision than the team. But when you go to Mookie Betts, I look at this move, and I say, I do not think Mookie Betts is going to finish his contract in the Red Sox uniform.
Right.
Because exactly what I said. I think that a guy coming in from the outside looks at it as, look at how baseball is. You have all these big contracts. This isn't how you build a team. And particularly when you have very, very thin levels at the top levels of the minor leagues and you need to replenish some sort of talent there. You need to find another young, controllable starter to fill in that really uncertain rotation. And the best or an easiest way to do that is probably with Mookie Betts and not to sign Mookie Betts to the big contract. Because, guys, one of the things I think that really went bad for Dombrowski in the eyes of John Henry was John Henry said, hey, go get him. You know, you're in place to make the decisions. You're telling me how I should spend my money. And then he spends the money, and he basically falls into the trap of, these guys did it for us in the World Series, and they're going to be doing it for us going forward, which, you know, obviously isn't always the right track, and we found out that to be the case. You have Eovaldi, you have Sale, you have $80 million tied up in three starting pitchers. So I think John Henry kind of looked at that, the Dombrowski situation. Why did we defer to these guys instead of sort of making the uncomfortable decision moving forward and maybe doing something a little bit different?
Well, this is the, you know, I complain all the time, and I've complained to you about it, Rob. I complained to my audience about it. Does John Henry have any consistent philosophy at all? He's going back to Charrington and Theo with this guy, Chaim Bloom. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he knew exactly what he was getting in Dombrowski. So why? You know, I don't understand all this fluctuation in philosophy.
Well, I agree with half of that. I agree in the most important half, which is you're right, because they're all over the place. They're always chasing their tail with a lot of different things. You can go to the pitchers over 30 years old. You can go to, you know, taking pitches, not taking pitchers. You can go to a lot of things. The Cuban baseball players, remember, they miss out on Abreu, so they sign Ruznick Castillo. There's a ton of stuff which they're always sort of a day late, a dollar short on. I will say in this respect, though, that Dombrowski was the right guy at the right time, as it proved out. You know, you win the World Series, and now you're in a situation where you put yourself in this situation because of how they approached Dombrowski. They knew this was going to happen. They knew that this probably wasn't the guy to build up the farm system and have it for the long haul. And his contract was up after next year. So with all these decisions and the way that the organization is going, you can't really say we're going to, if you don't believe that that's the guy to build the team the way that you want, as currently constituted, then you can't extend Dombrowski. So that doesn't surprise me at all that they're going this route.
Okay, so what are Bloom's biggest challenges? You mentioned Mookie. Looks like Martinez is going to opt out. Beyond that, what does he have to do to get this ship righted?
Well, I don't think there's any question. It's, you know, this whole team, this whole scenario is built off of the top three pitchers that I mentioned. $80 million worth of pitchers at the top of your rotation that you have no idea what they're going to deliver. You don't know if they're healthy. You don't know if they're productive. The two teams in the World Series built their teams the same way. I mean, they built their teams by spending a lot of money on the top of the rotation, and it's worked out for them. The problem, if you do that and it doesn't work out, you put yourself in a real bind and you don't leave yourself with a lot of flexibility. So really for Bloom, it's you have one spot in that rotation, because I don't think you can move any of those three guys. And you have Eduardo Rodriguez. You have one spot. What are you going to do with that spot? And also, how are you going to be able to move on from the guys that, you know, like I said before, they sort of like, oh, we love these guys, the Brock Holtz, the Mitch Moreland. these type of guys and say, I have better guys, I have better, cheaper guys, and I'm going to be able to find some guys who will be able to be called up in the middle of the year from AAA. So those are the biggest things, and I said those are the biggest things. I mean, those are things are hard. This is why everyone was sort of doing that narrative of nobody wants this job, because it's going to be a hard job.
With his experience in Tampa and working with the payroll that he had down there, how much more success do you think he'll have here with bringing this payroll down?
Well, it's a dangerous thing, right? We always do this. We did it with, you know, when way back when they were courting Billy Beane. Oh, they're doing this. Look at what he's doing with a smaller payroll. They're winning. Mm-hmm. But it's not apples to apples, because when you get money, you're going to probably spend the money. And you can say the Red Sox are cutting payroll, which they are, but they're still going to end up over $200 million. So it's, and also there's different dynamics at play. Like I mentioned, sure, he was brave about making trades before, but it's a lot harder to be brave about making trades in Boston than it is Tampa. So it's not just going to correlate, say, this is going to be the same as that. Now, I will say this. You have something to base it on in Andrew Friedman going to the Dodgers. He went from Tampa to a big market team with the Dodgers. He cut payroll a little bit, built up the farm system, did a lot of things that they did in Tampa, and it really, really worked well. So I think that if you want the model about how this can work, it is absolutely looking at what Andrew Friedman did.
Okay, so Friedman has also been accused out in L.A., you probably know, of pretty much running the show. Roberts is more or less Friedman's puppet. Maybe that was the way it was in Tampa. Where is Alex Cora's role? Is it changed now that Chaim Bloom is the new VP of operations?
We're going to have to find out, because I have to imagine it's going to be a little bit different dynamic with Dave Dombrowski. Dave Dombrowski, they did build up the analytics. You can say they were still behind, but they did add people, so that was a plus. But I don't think that maybe he got in the weeds like Chaim Bloom is going to get into.
Right.
And I'll say this about Cora, is that he embraces this stuff. He likes the information. He likes to dive into it. I don't think he would like to have someone control it. It was interesting. You know, I did a podcast with David Ross a couple of days before he was named manager, and we were talking about, you know, I said to him, I say, how has managing changed since even when he stopped playing, which was only a few years ago? He said, this is way more about the front office than it was even a couple of years ago. And I think that a lot of managers have just accepted that. Now, I don't think they'll accept saying, hey, this is going to be your lineup and you better put it in there. But still, there is a lot more interaction than there ever has been before. And that's going to be the case here. I will say this. One of Chaim Bloom, if you talk to people, you hear people talk about him, one of his strengths, I think, is communication, is being able to relate to people. And I think that is, in this day and age of transferring information, that is a huge, huge part of this deal.
Was that Dombrowski's downfall, that he wasn't a good communicator?
I think he was in some sense, but I think that the problem was is that, you know, I think he was a tough guy to work with at some times. Like, this isn't me. Like, I think Dave Dombrowski did a really good job here. I think he gets knocked for the minor league system about, you know, stripping that. But the reality is, I would say, hey, who did you trade that you're saying, I can't believe you don't have him anymore other than Mankata and Kopech? But I do think he kept some guys at arm's length in that front office a little bit. I don't think there was maybe sort of this environment, which, you know, we're hearing now, which Bloom really wants, which is, okay, let's get everybody in this room and this talk. I think there was a little bit, but not to the extent that maybe there needed to be. So that's going to be an interesting part of this. And like I said, I mean, you come back to it about getting in the weeds with this stuff. I think Dombrowski was good in terms of accepting that this game was going in a different direction with analytics, but I don't think he was really, really going to get down and dirty with it. Whereas I think Bloom really, he would talk about a guy with his sort of background, you know, he's going to be in the room with Zach Scott, the analytics guy with the Red Sox, and he's going to be going through this stuff. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest changes.
One of the analytical guys, another one, didn't he just leave yesterday or the day before with the Red Sox?
If he did, it was news to me. I don't know. I know that Zach Scott and Eddie Romero are right now, I think, are keeping their job as assistant GM. And then Brian Halloran's being moving up to, and Zach Scott was the head of analytics. Oh, you're talking about Bill James. Are you talking about Bill James?
No, I wish I was.
Oh, well, he is leaving. Bill James is leaving. So Bill James is the guy who is leaving the organization as a consultant.
And of course, he's the guy that started it all way back when.
Yes.
A lot of comparisons, and we talked about it a little bit at the top of the conversation, between Theo and this new guy, Chaim Bloom. Are there similarities? What are the differences?
Yeah, I think there's similarities. They both went to Yale.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking about baseball philosophy and policy.
I think there's a lot of similarities with, you know, it's funny, you know, he's obviously younger now than Theo was, but there's a lot of similarities with a lot of these GMs, and it's not just because they went to Ivy League schools. It's because, you know, one of the things that, you know, there's a great podcast out there, Mark Feinstein did for MLB.com with that Bloom talked about 30 minutes on, and he talked about how, you know, before you have the small market teams who are trying to get the advantage, the money ball stuff, trying to get the advantage with information. Now every team does this. Every team is looking for those little bits of edges, that little bit of analytical information, that next thing, and they're investing in it as much as anything else. And that's the difference here. So I think when you ask the similarities, I think that all these GMs are of like mind. Where this is what they're prioritizing. They're prioritizing these things which aren't right out in front of us, which is maybe scouting or throwing money at things. It is finding the new technology, finding the next edge that normally before was just a small market team was looking for.
One of the things that really bothered me this past year to learn of late that the analytics guy and the pitching coach were fighting half the season over philosophies and who was going to do what and where. How much did you know about that?
Well, I think I didn't know, like, they were in the room basically saying, hey, you know, we want to do it this way, and I know we want to do it that way. There's always those sort of disagreements, Larry. I think that the disagreement which I came across in terms of how maybe the Red Sox pitchers were approaching things, and I don't know how much of this was Dana LaVinci or not, but you look at their games and how many times, I mean, they let the majors in walks, and there was a reason for that. Their strategy was we're gonna start every at bat on the outside edge of the strike zone, and then we're gonna go out from there. And the whole idea is that you're going to get hitters to chase. Well, you know, when you aren't able to do that on a regular basis, you're going to end up with a ton of walks and a ton of balls. And that's exactly what happened. So the mentality and the philosophy I know that they want to change is, hey, let's start attacking the strike zone. When you're Matt Barnes and you have a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, yeah, you don't have to throw your curveball 60% of the time. It's okay to throw that 97%. The 97-mile-an-hour fastball in the strike zone because it's really, really good. And that's, guys, what drives me nuts about baseball now. Every pitcher is so worried about the philosophy of the hitters instead of just saying, hey, I'm Mariano Rivera. I have a great cutter. Here it is. Try to hit it.
So coming up, we got the 2020 season just around the bend. Hot Stove League will be happening in a matter of days once the World Series ends. You have the Mookie issue, you have the Martinez perhaps opting out, all that money committed to those three starting pitchers. Does Bloom start to address the bullpen situation anytime soon?
I don't think I'd be shocked if the bullpen gets touched at all.
Really?
Really. Yeah, so, I mean, I think that when you're trying to allocate money now at all, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, okay, you can add a piece here or there, but I don't think it's like you're going to go out and sign a high-priced closer or invest a lot of money into it. Because when you're looking to cut payroll and you have to fix other parts of this equation, you can easily look at that bullpen and say, And I know that that was the narrative, that it was bad, but hey, Workman was one of the best relievers in baseball.
Yeah, I don't think the perception. I don't think the perception, Rob. I mean, people, if you were even paying attention in the last couple months after the couple sweeps against Tampa and the Yankees, yeah, Workman turned out statistically to be a good reliever. But I think the perception is it's based on those first 4 months of the season. The Red Sox bullpen is in tatters, quote unquote.
Right, but the problem is that you can't we can't deal in perception. We have to deal in reality, and the reality is that you have a lot of things to do with, not a lot of money to do it with. And if you're going to go with, if this much like they did last year, right? They went on projections, and that was a dangerous thing. That was more dangerous than this year, to be honest with you. This isn't dealing so much on projections. It might be dangerous to think Darwin's and Hernandez is going to take it next level, but Brendan Workman did it for a whole year, so that's one piece of the puzzle. Is it perfect? Is it the ideal bullpen? No. But if you're going to go down the list of problems for this team, the perception is it's going to be at the top. I think the reality for Bloom is going to be it's not at the top.
Hmm. Are we ever going to get more Henry and Werner? I thought the way they handled the Dombrowski thing was a disgrace. In the wee hours of a Friday night and jettison the guy out of town and then having having Sam Kennedy face the nation later to try and patch things up. But, Rob, that's not a very good look, I don't think.
Well, the press conference was ridiculous. I mean, the lack of press conference was ridiculous. I mean, it was. It was like this whole idea that you don't need press conferences. I mean, this is the reason you have press conferences. And 2.5 weeks later, they had a sort of a bizarre press conference. It was, you know, which was this sort of informal thing, which you can still tape, and it was on the record. And I think the biggest thing, you know, you mentioned John Henry, you know, John Henry, usually when he talks, he's too honest. I mean, and I think they know that. I think he knows that. Let's go through it. I mean, he talked twice during the year. He talked once at spring training, and he talked to me in London. That was it. You know, I'm sorry, three times. And at the end of the year, when he has that press conference, at the spring training thing, he talks about how we screwed up on John Lester, right? Remember that?
Yes.
And like,
yes,
we screwed up John Lester. We're not going to make that mistake again. Talked to me in London, basically saying, hey, you know what? We allocated our money poorly. You know, we shouldn't have brought back all these guys from the World Series team. We shouldn't have just turned over the same roster. Again, probably a little too honest at the time. And then this time, he brings up the luxury tax issue, which they have never defined, never. And he brings it up, and now everyone runs with that. So this is the reason I think that they don't talk, but just because that's the reality, that doesn't mean you can't get away from doing it. You still, when you fire Dave Dombrowski, you still have to have a press conference. So, yeah, that was bizarre.
I thought it was. You know, there was a time when you would walk down the street, similar to, let's say, John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever, and everybody saw this Rob Bradford and the like. I find the interest in baseball right now, along with you as the key writer in this town, to be dwindling a little bit. I just don't find the interest there.
Well, gee, because the Red Sox were out of it for the last 2 months of the season.
No, it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is, baseball was such a hot topic in this town.
When they win,
I don't find that to be the same, Rob. What are your impressions about baseball?
I love how you phrase that. First of all, I wanted to go on record saying my brand has never been hotter, Larry. So
really?
It's
really,
I cannot speak for baseball, but don't lump me in with baseball, Larry. Come on.
All right. I don't know. I thought maybe you were connected.
The ratings for the Bradford Show podcast are off the charts. I can't say the same thing about the World Series. There's no question. I mean, this whole baseball is, you know, there's so many things to pick through in terms of the time of game, in terms of how the game's being played, about the rule changes, about the pace of it. And then in the middle of all of it, you have a team like the Houston Astros stupidly handling the Brandon Tubman thing, where, like, could you botch that anymore? And then you have the baseball issues. No, I had John Lester tell me the other day, for the Sunday notes tomorrow, you know, he's like, can we just get a consistent baseball? All of a sudden, guys are hitting baseballs in the World Series that were out in the regular season and they're just fly balls. So you are just killing yourself at every step of the way. And I'm going to give you another one, which relates to our corner of the world, guys, which is, you know, how do you listen to baseball games? You listen to baseball games. We are the broadcast rights holders for the Red Sox, for baseball in this area. Well, more and more people are listening to baseball games on their phone, correct? Mm. Right? I mean, this is how it works. Well, MLB is the only professional sports organization that does not allow us to stream from say, WEI.com.
I know.
You have to buy the MLB.com. And what is that doing? That's limiting. That's cutting your audience in half.
Right. It's the old philosophy back in the day where they didn't want to televise games because they were afraid people wouldn't show up to the ballpark. And we know that televised games and radio games only promote the product. They don't detract from it.
Rob, what's the biggest difference between the game today and let's say 15 years ago? Why is it's just not as popular? Why is that?
About 30 minutes on an average time of game to begin with. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's a couple things. Number one is the pace of the game. Mm-hmm. You could talk, it's not about cutting, I would cut 9 minutes off. It's about the pace of the game, not looking in your hat all the time, not taking way too long for every single pitch. And the other part, guys, it's the reality of our society, right? I mean, this is just the attention span of people. There's too many other things to do. And we've been saying that, sure, for the last 15 years. But it's more so now than ever. I don't think there's any question about it, right? I mean, this is the problem that they have.
You know what it is?
You have too many things to do.
Rob, it's become a regional sport. I have teenagers. You probably still have teenagers. And my boys love the NFL and the NBA, both on a local and a national level. They'll watch any NBA game. They know about all the players in the NBA and the NFL. They couldn't care less about Major League Baseball, and that includes the Red Sox. I think that's a big issue. It's become an ultra-regional sport. Larry wouldn't even be complaining about baseball 365 days ago because the Red Sox would be about to win a World Series, or they would have won a World Series by this point.
But we're spoiled.
Right, and so it's totally regional. No one watches the World Series anymore. We will watch Golden State and whoever LeBron's playing for. We will watch who's ever in the Super Bowl. No one's going to watch a World Series if their team isn't in it. Doesn't it really come down to that?
Yeah. Yeah, and the other night was a good example of that, where you had the Celtics game on against the World Series. And I got to be honest with you, I was trying to watch the Celtics game. Now, it made me want to watch baseball more than ever. That was the worst basketball game I've ever seen in my life. But still, I think, you know, Rick Porcello said this to me, and I think it rings true, which is you can adjust this and you can adjust that. But at the end of the day, either you like the game of baseball or you don't.
Bingo.
That's it. I mean, and you can't change, you know, you can't change the actual game. And to your point, I think that, you know, just less and less people are actually liking the game of baseball. And it's not like you can't, the things that you're doing, like I remember like they're going to All-Star Game and having the social media room and they're trying to do all this. And sure, they'll mic up players and this and that. But here's, either you like the game of baseball or you don't. And find a better way, you know, the things I talk about with presenting it, making it more available, things like that, that can help. So just understand that it is what it is, but at the same time, don't shoot yourself in the foot when it comes to the opportunities that are presenting themselves and making maybe a little bit better.
But if they don't like it, then you got a problem because you got people like Mookie Betts who wants $300 million a year. The math doesn't add up.
Oh, it will. It will. He'll get it somewhere, don't you think, Rob?
That's the thing. And normally you would say that, you know, attendance is down, but revenues are up.
Yeah.
No, it's,
it makes no sense.
And that's,
keep going up on the ticket prices.
Hey, Rob,
I guess.
Rob, how did it feel to be back on AM for the first time in about a decade? It feels good.
Oh my goodness, are you kidding me? Yeah. It feels so good.
Yep.
No, that's actually false. I felt like I was at the beginning of bringing AM radio back by doing about 15 spring training games on AM radio.
There you go. So you're the pioneer. You're the guy that made it all possible for us.
There's nothing more delicious. Nothing more delicious than sitting back listening to some spring training baseball on AM radio. Absolutely. But I will say this: is that you guys are doing a great job. It is great to listen to you. And also, you mentioned before I came on the fact of the matter is that I talk about how people are listening to this stuff. Go to radio.com, stream this. It sounds exactly the same as FM. Yeah. You guys sound great no matter what you're on, so I really appreciate it.
And we appreciate your time. Rob, we'll catch you next time.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.